Welcome to Day Zero Update for October 8th, 2023. I'm your host, Chris Elogie.
And I'm Brandon Harkin.
Yeah, just a two-man crew. We've got a decent amount of news this week.
Yep.
We got a bunch of games to talk about, as well as news about, say, Redfall finally getting an update that it could have used at launch.
Yeah, or like, you know, they could have added it before they decided to launch the damn thing.
Yeah. We got some games getting dates, a couple getting delayed. We finally got something. We were wondering like how they were going to pronounce Kate Sith's name in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Yeah.
And they just decided to tweet it out. So
we'll
tell you about that. Some Microsoft news, some Nintendo news, and some bad news to end the show. Layoffs.
Yeah,
and some other stuff going on there. So we'll talk about that stuff as we go. But for now, we'll talk about what we've been playing, and I'll kick it off here. I've been playing some Assassin's Creed Mirage. I got that in from Gamefly yesterday, so I put a few hours into it. And I'm liking it a lot so far. It's very much in the style of the like Assassin's Creed 2 trilogy of games. A smaller scope on the world where it seems to be focused around Baghdad here in the Middle East. And you're playing as and Basim, who was in Valhalla.
Yeah.
This is supposed to be sort of DLC, beefing up a bit into its own standalone thing. And yeah, you've got no loot here, which is good. They're just constant dropping of items that you have to look at to see if it's worthy of, you know, putting in your thing there, in your inventory and all that. You start off with a dagger and a sword, and then you got your, you know, assassin's knife, that comes out of your, finger there, or between your fingers there, as they are still doing the cut off a finger to make room for this thing. That wouldn't be done away with until, you know, the Ezio era of sorts. So yeah, getting a lot of good environmental vibes and design stuff from like Assassin's Creed one, and with the that also being set in and around, you know, the Middle East. So you get a lot of similar.
The first one was based in and around Jerusalem.
Yeah. And they have some similar vibes there to that stuff, though. That one had, I think, three cities to it. This one just seems to focus on the one, but yeah, like the assassins are kind of headquartered in a similar kind of area to what they had in one, which is sort of this, closed in area that you kind of drop through the roof on to go check in with them. And yeah, Basim at this point, well, when it starts, he is very much a wide-eyed, you know, idealist who wants to help people, but does not have the status or abilities to do much more than, you know, stealing from rich people kind of stuff. And he's been doing some fetch quests for the Hidden Ones, which are the assassins at this point. They have not taken on the assassin's name yet, though they have the same style of outfits and all that. So he steals a ledger for this delivery ship and, you know, happens to run into one of them when he's bringing it back, to which he kind of just begs to be taken in by them. But then, you know, decides to take it on his own to try and steal whatever this important item is that is in the palace. Ends up, you know, handling the item that causes visions, and he freaks out, and his buddy that's with him kills the leader. I forget their, they call it there, but kills them, and they run off to get out of the city and all that. So a lot of stuff happens as you kind of run into that assassin that you met earlier, and they help you sort of get out, and you get recruited into the assassins by force. And you sort of go through some more tutorial stuff as you learn, you know, relearn how combat used to be, which is a lot of, you know, parrying and dodging and countering and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That wasn't so much of a part of the experience for quite a while here.
Mm-hmm.
For at least the last three games, but even before that, they were starting to find other ways to do things. But you sort of get a sign that, you know, the Caliphate has, and the hidden ones, or the not the hidden ones, the old ones, the big group of golden masked people that run the place in the shadows, have like taken over Baghdad completely, and so they send you in to investigate, you know, what happened to your buddy that was sent in before and sort of came back barely alive, and dealing with that. So yeah, it's that's where it kind of starts going around. They have the investigation system that's been in some of the last few games, where you're sort of like taking in information, you know, getting updates like, oh, you need to go over here and talk to this person. And they might be like, well, my buddy's been captured by, you know, the guards, so you need to go rescue them and, you know, do that kind of stuff, or go find a thing. Nothing really too complex for what they're doing, but they're having the story evolve that way versus, you know, bespoke missions of sorts. So you kind of have a little more freedom to choose where to go, though you're probably going to have to do most everything to keep things progressing. But the weapons and your gear can upgrade through, you know, a blacksmith or a tailor, depending on whether you want weapons or your outfit upgraded. And those have different perks and such to them. I have a second outfit that reduces the chances of people seeing you do bad stuff. Because if you do, you kind of get notoriety, which leads to the guards being more easily able to see you and chase after you. The other way that you can deal with that is by tearing down the wanted posters or finding like a town crier and giving him a certain kind of currency to erase that as well. For that. And so, yeah, you're kind of doing a lot of stuff with the vision stuff you have to see, like, oh, there's enemies around me, and there's, you know, some guarding, you know, special treasure chests and that kind of stuff. And the upgrades for your item, your weapons and gear requires a blueprint to do them. So I have not found if that's something that's easily done or not. I've gotten one for a side outfit, so I might do the upgrade for that. But you can also like pickpocket people and hang out on benches to kind of go invisible, or hang out in crowds, or hire, you know, certain groups of people to cause a little chaos and distract from what you're doing, that kind of stuff. So a lot of that kind of stuff that you saw in like those Ezio games. So
yeah,
it seems pretty neat. I'm especially looking forward to putting some more time into it. But yeah, it works out pretty well. So that's one to check out. Another game I played, Disney Speedstorm.
Yeah.
This is the Disney kart racer that was in early access for much of this year, but finally has come out of it. I'm guessing because people weren't exactly putting the money into it that maybe they did for Dreamlight Valley. And so the best way to kind of get it out there is to make it free to play.
Yep.
I believe it's on everything, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, PC, and maybe even mobile as well. I've been trying to decipher when I see the crossplay icons, like which one's which. I think the controllers are the other consoles. There's a PC tower one that's for PC. There's another one that I think is either, I think it's mobile. There's like a phone-ish kind of thing. I think is mobile. And I think there's another one that's for bots that they throw in there on occasion. Yeah. So, but this is a game that has a ton of content to it. That was a nice surprise. There's some single player stuff that you do to unlock multiplayer, the live events, and the battle pass to it. And with the battle pass for this season, they had a bunch of single player content, like more more chapters of campaign stuff you can do. It's centered around, I think it's Aladdin for this season. And I took a look at the battle pass for that, and it seems pretty decent for what it is. They have free stuff, I think, on every tier of the battle pass, or every level of the battle pass as you level it up. And it's like just under $10 to buy it outright if you want the rest of the stuff. And that all seems to be like materials and shards that you use to unlock other characters for that. So you're kind of, I think, working towards getting Aladdin and Jasmine. I think the genie and Jafar are also in there. I don't know what all is new with this particular battle pass. It's, I think, the fourth one. But yeah, every day there's a free box that gets you some random selection of items that can be shards that help you unlock characters or upgrade them. There's upgrading in terms of upgrading their level or upgrading in terms of upgrading their items so that the power-ups are more powerful as you upgrade the items section of their menu. It's a free-to-play game through and through, in that there's tons of items, tons of currencies that are hard to keep track of and managing that stuff. So you're kind of trying to upgrade your characters that you have. You get Mickey, Donald Duck, and Goofy through the first part of the campaign. And yeah, like the multiplayer has its own currency, and you're upgrading. Each character has their own like unlock system for that, which just unlocks a lot of currency, including a multiplayer specific currency that you get like 30 points or 30 coins, multiplayer coins out of that for each level. And then they throw out items like, hey, here's 5,000 coins for this. And you're like, who the hell is going to play that much of this to get 5,000 coins? But they do have a nice little multiplayer pack for 300 that unlocks a lot of extra bonus stuff, a lot of like skins and such. So that's kind of the one you should be working towards on that front. But the action works out pretty well. I do recommend when you get new characters to go and look at their power up pages, because they act differently for different types of characters, as they kind of break them down into like speedsters and brawlers who have more powerful weapons out of the power up stuff. And there's defensive characters and tricksters who I think do the drifting and jumping stuff a little bit better than the others. So yeah, there's perks to that stuff, and there's, you know, the power-ups, a lot of them can be charged, so you hold down the button before using them, and you you get some other ability out of that power-up kind of thing, versus just, you know, throwing it forward or backwards or whatever. So there's a lot of depth in that way in terms of how you're going to use that stuff. And the action works out pretty well, controls pretty well. In the stages that they have in there so far that I've seen, they do a pretty good job of adding some, you know, alternate pathing to it, where, you know, the tracks split up, that kind of thing. So you're going to get opportunities to get away from the other people if you're having trouble taking, you know, attacks and that kind of stuff. But yeah, it works out pretty well for a game for free without having to put anything into it. It definitely gives you a good bit of stuff to do through that you can kind of grind through and unlock characters and all that without having to put any money into it, though there's definitely the hooks where it throws that stuff at you. Oftentimes when you get back to the main menus, it's like, hey, here's something in the store you could buy. That kind of stuff. And yeah, definitely at launch they're like, hey, buy this Jack Sparrow bundle to get that. And a number of the early campaign missions, like, hey, you can use Mickey or you can use Jack Sparrow. And I think that came with like coins to upgrade Jack Sparrow a bit, so it might be better than what you might have out of Mickey early on.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they got a bunch of limited time events that go for, you know, different types of rewards. Some are just different character shards. Some are just, here's a way to get some easy, you know, upgrade items for your characters. And others are for more challenging stuff where they have different bonuses depending on the difficulty you pick for that stuff. But the early campaign stuff is all super easy. I think I won every race, but one of them. And then I could still pass with even finishing like second. Mm-hmm. So it's not something that requires too much out of you, but you will probably want to go back and finish all that just to have it all done.
Mm-hmm.
Multiplayer has been pretty good. The weird thing is the start where they show like each character, each player that's in the game just goes on through at least two or three times through the lineup, as I think it's some server issues or server connections that people have that are not good. As I saw in many races, like pop-ups, like so-and-so has a bad connection. So-and-so's dropped out of the race. You know, like, I don't know if they quit or if they're playing on like a Switch or something and having terrible internet, you know, anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of races start with like eight players and then I find out like, oh, only five finished. That kind of stuff. So at least, you know, improves your rewards since you're guaranteed at least, you know, fifth or sixth or whatever in that stuff. But I won some races by just knowing the tracks pretty well, knowing how to exploit the different players that were going on, probably realizing that like, many of them are going to be stupid kids. Mm-hmm. So I'll try this and see how that goes. So that worked out pretty well. But yeah, there's a multiplayer mode where it's ranked, but it doesn't, you know, make everybody the same level. So they all have the same general power to them. And there's one that does do that, makes everybody level 30. As you know, if you're leveled up, you're going to be faster than the others. People that just started using that character or whatever. So, it's still pretty fun either way, but you can definitely tell like, oh, these people are ahead of me by a good bit because they have, you know, characters level 10 or 20 levels higher than me. So there you go. Disney Speedstorm. Pretty solid game for what it is. So here for that. My Hero Ultra Rumble is the other game I played. That is a free to play game on, I think, PS4, Switch, Xbox One, and PC. This is a battle royale set in the My Hero Academia universe and seems to be based on some early stuff in the anime. So you don't have to worry about spoiler stuff with it. Now, this game is through and through a gacha game. They have some DLC bonus for PS Plus users for this that gives you 200 of the tickets, which 10 tickets is a pull. So you get 20 pulls, and that's how you unlock characters. That's how you get a lot of the customization stuff, alternate outfits and sayings and all that kind of stuff, you know, very Overwatch-ish kind of like different audio lines you can put out and stuff like that. And that's kind of the thing that's rotten here is you're kind of unable to, you can get like character tokens to unlock characters, but it only works on a couple of the like 18 characters. I think you only start with Deku and maybe I forget what her name is, the girl that he likes, but I think that's the only two you get up front. You can play matches with up to three other people through the, they have like a, you can try these characters out for today, you know, for one match each, which you could get killed like, you know, a couple minutes into a match and then that's it. That was your chance with the character. They do have training stuff if you want to get more in-depth with the character and sort of figure out which one might work best for you. But I only unlocked one with the pulls that they gave me. There was a Eijiro, the the kid who can make his skin hard as rock.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sort of a melee character. I think I'm better with the more ranged characters,
mm-hmm.
Which like Deku's one of those. And there's others with more gunnish kind of attacks that's I think work out better for me. But I didn't really get into this game too much from what I played for a couple of hours. And it doesn't help that the menus are sluggish because I think it's checking the internet connection, mm-hmm. and, you know, what your unlocks are constantly. And there's a lot of currencies to this. There's an agency system that's your clans for your party stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get bonuses out of that. But that also requires a lot of agency points for that. Mm. They have live events. They have one going on now for the launch of the game. Mm. I think a couple of characters might be playable through that. So you can unlock some stuff by doing, you know, various missions,
mm-hmm.
For that. And yeah, it's okay. It's forced 3v3 player parties. You don't get to do any soloing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very much like the festival they do in the second season. And I think it all takes place in the USG center, the training center that they have, where the bad guys invade in the first season. So it's a pretty neat, it has destructible environments. People landed on one dome, and if you enough people just keep doing attacks on the dome, it just breaks the dome. Everybody mm-hmm. goes falling down. You can break holes in walls and all that kind of stuff. I don't think it's all completely destructible outside of some specific instances, but the walls just have like chunks that break out of it,
mm-hmm.
that kind of stuff. So, but that game's all right. It's just not doing much for me, but it did get me back into one to watch My Hero Academia, which
mm-hmm.
might be better than the game. So there you go for that. And the last one I've been playing is the Lamplighters League that is on Game Pass. That is a turn-based strategy game in the vein of like an XCOM.
Mm-hmm.
But it's set in kind of a Indiana Jones-esque kind of world.
Mm-hmm.
Where I was at, you initially are sort of taking on a mission that leads to some bad stuff happening. And so you're kind of trying to get this pilot out of this area and get on the plane and go to kind of regroup and figure out what the next step is. And you end up meeting a big rich guy who's like, oh yeah, I'm fighting this big bad organization of, you know, bad people that are going after the Tower of Babel,
mm-hmm.
trying to find it. And he's hired, you know, your crew to do that for him. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, well, how do we know you're not a bad guy too? And you're like, well, you don't.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some moral stuff there, but yeah, there's like base stuff that goes on there similar to XCOM. I don't know
mm-hmm.
how much of it because I only got to the second mission from what I've played so far.
Mm-hmm.
But this game's pretty buggy. It's been so far. I was working my way through the tutorial, got mm-hmm. to a thing where you're supposed to sneak up on a guy to take him out.
Mm-hmm.
And it popped up a pop-up that it wanted me to, you know, push the A button to go through.
Mm-hmm.
And the A button wasn't tied to that. It was tied to the, like, ability you have on the map.
Ah.
So it wouldn't let me, you know, progress. So I had to quit out. And then I realized, oh, it had not auto-saved since the beginning of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like 10 minutes of progress. So I had to start over again. And that mm-hmm. was pretty annoying. I was like, all right, I have to just save every so often when I'm about to do something important.
Mm.
Which is like every time you're going to start a combat scenario or something.
Mm-hmm.
But the neat thing in outside of like an XCOM is that you are moving freely outside of combat. You're able to walk around environments pretty freely to take alternate routes and that kind of stuff. So there's kind of a little bit of a,
mm-hmm.
not really an RTS, but that kind of like top down isometric kind of look to it. The annoying thing is the camera doesn't really give you any better views of what's going on around you. So you kind of have to look around a bit more than you would like to at times.
Mm-hmm.
It does have like a recon mode when you push in, I think, the right stick that can help you look around a little bit more without having to run around in its slow movement. But it's not particularly great at explaining things, even in combat. You can highlight enemies, but it doesn't necessarily tell you like how much health they have.
Yeah.
From what I could see, and I had one that was throwing mines down. I was like, are these mines? And I tried to highlight them, and it wouldn't tell me anything about the thing that just got thrown on the ground.
Mm.
That kind of stuff where it's like, this would be useful to have more information, but this recon mode is not giving me information, so it doesn't seem like a very good recon mode.
Mm.
But yeah, I've had other bugs. So when I first met the big rich guy that's going to hire you to, you know, go on this big search for him.
Mm-hmm.
The cutscene for that, where they're standing around a table, just stopped there with them just animating around the table. It never started the actual dialogue or cutscene or anything.
Mm.
So I had to quit out. Luckily, the autosave was right there instead of the big fight that I had just done.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of like having to restart that. So I was happy about that. So, but yeah, this game is a little rough around the edges. I think they did put out an update here in the past day or two, so maybe that fixed some things.
Mm.
But right now, it's been like, this game's pretty neat, but it's also rough around the edges and pretty buggy in a way that's making me want to take a break from it for things that are more polished and ready to go around the holidays here. So I might go back to that a little bit later, let them kind of work on it for a bit more. But that's on Game Pass on PC and Xbox, and is an Xbox exclusive on the console front. So it's about as much of an opportunity to have to check it out. So, but it's pretty neat for what it is.
Mm.
It's just rough around the edges, and it's maybe not worth putting time into it just yet.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been pretty much it for me. Brandon, what have you been doing?
Well, as for me, I have been playing more of the Phantom Liberty expansion on Cyberpunk 2077. I really do have to say that this expansion really should be seen as sort of like a masterclass of scenario writing, because in hindsight, not very long. Like, I mean, compared to the actual campaign of the game, it's not terribly long. But because of the extent of the, you know, world building that they do with this, sort of revealing a little bit of like what life is like outside of Night City in other parts of what were once the former United States, you know, how the government works, its history, all this stuff. The people at CD Projekt Red called it a spy thriller, and that's very much that's the best description you can give, because not only does it have like the sort of type of spy fiction type stuff you have of, you know, there being like sleeper agents in Night City and stuff and all this, but the constant shifting and questioning of like alliances and loyalties and all of this stuff are amazing. It is legitimately amazing. It's actually kind of sad, because this particular story is so much more gripping than, and so much better written than like the main campaign for the game is. Don't get me wrong, I liked the main campaign. It definitely had some characters I really liked, and it had some really well-written parts. But those were kind of feast or famine, because there were also parts of it that were just a slog. And it kind of definitely gives me hope for what the sequel's going to be. If this is the type of, you know, if this is the type of direction they're going. But yeah, it's just, it's really good. And I highly recommend anybody who wants to give Cyberpunk 2077 a try to do it now, because along with this expansion, you know, they came out with the update that essentially changed a good, you know, it sort of upended and did a lot of change to a lot of different stuff, and you know, just it feels kind of like a different game now. But yeah, and other than that, I'm also still kind of chipping away at Starfield. Haven't been playing it as much, but I do want to sort of, as an add-on to what I said last week, Starfield, I did mention how it looks like, you know, it's the old Bethesda engine is clearly showing its age. That's still true, but it's not for nothing, because the other parts of the game actually look gorgeous. The environments look gorgeous. The graphics look gorgeous. Even like a lot of the people you come in contact with when you're actually having conversations with, their facial animations are a lot more advanced than you would see in something like Skyrim. But that being said, there are definitely parts where it's very obvious that they need to start using a new engine. Like, they need to put this engine to bed and do a new one, because it's definitely hampering them. But yeah, that's what I've been playing.
All right, let's get to some news here.
Mm-hmm.
And in the weird cadence we have kind of found ourselves in, PlayStation announces PS Plus stuff 1 week, Game Pass the next week, PS Plus the next week, Game Pass the week after that. We're in a Game Pass week.
Yep.
We have a couple games here for the next couple of weeks here. And yeah, it is four games. Mm-hmm. Some big games, but still four. As I mentioned, Lamplighters League and Gotham Knights came out. So we talked about that. They announced that stuff a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, available now, Warhammer 40,000 Darktide on the Xbox Series X and S.
Mm-hmm.
This is the sort of more dark and futuristic version of like Left 4 Dead stuff they've been doing before, Vermintide, which has had a lot of issues for the launch game. I don't know if they've improved that much, but hopefully, because it's been a while for that. But let's see, October 10th, we have Forza Motorsport. So there you go for that. That is the newest of the sim line for that series. And it seems like that's gotten pretty good reviews, so it seems like it'll be worth checking out here on Tuesday. For that, let's see what else is on here. October 12th is From Space. This is a solo or co-op action shooter for up to four players. Yeah, you're liberating the Earth from an alien infestation using over-the-top weaponry in a post-apocalyptic world. Kind of very silly and kind of simplistic visuals to it. So there you go for that. That'll be Thursday. And then next week on October 17th will be Like a Dragon Isshin for console and PC. That's the old Like a Dragon game came out on the PS3, PS4, where you have a samurai that you're controlling, Sakamoto Ryoma, who very much looks like the guy in the other games. As he has fallen into a bad situation, had to kind of find his own way on his own, apart from his adopted family of sorts. So that's a game that's pretty fun. So worth checking out. If you haven't done so, that'll be next Tuesday.
Yeah.
So yeah, there you go for the Game Pass stuff. So only four games here for the next week or so. But some stuff you can check out there. And let's see, what else is next? Also on Game Pass news, Redfall finally got a big update. That adds the performance mode people have been wanting, the 60 FPS mode that they did not have at launch. It also adds, let's see, new controller settings, stealth takedowns, because if you had seen any gameplay for that, if you snuck up on enemies, the only stealth move you could do is essentially like a typical first-person shooter melee attack, and then the enemy would fall over. No real stealth, you know, takedown move or anything to that. So that was a glaring thing, but they have seemingly fixed that, as well as some accessibility features and more stuff there. So that's pretty good to see. So yeah, that's good they finally did that, but yeah, I don't know if that's going to really change much about the the game's fortune. But we'll see. I don't think I'm going back to that anytime soon. I just did not enjoy the setting or the gameplay or really anything about it.
Yeah.
And so none of this is going to change any of that for me versus things I actually want to play that I have right now to do so. So there you go. Big Redfall update. Let's see. On the PlayStation Plus side, Sony announced a new app for PS5 and PS4, Sony Pictures Core.
Yeah.
Formerly called Bravia Core. I think it was an app that came with Bravia TVs that had some bonuses to it where if you, you know, for buying a Bravia TV, you got like tokens you could redeem for Sony Pictures movies, which you'd probably save for like the Spider-Man movies and Gran Turismo and Uncharted and that kind of stuff, like the more notable stuff that they've been doing. But it seems like they're going to give PS5, PS4, and I guess the Bravia TV owners first access to buying or renting their movies as they come out. I think Gran Turismo being the big one right now. As I think if you buy it through the app, you get some extra Gran Turismo currency through there. Yeah, they get a whole catalog of Sony Pictures movies to buy or rent through there. The, you know, the Across the Spider-Verse movies, Uncharted, The Equalizer. Let's see, No Hard Feelings, Bullet Train, Ghostbusters Afterlife, among others. But for PS Plus people, PS Plus premium people, they have a curated catalog of movies, Sony Pictures movies that you can check out at an, you know, no additional cost, which does not have a ton of notable movies, especially recent stuff. From when I looked in there, yeah, it's a lot of like mid-tier stuff. You know, you're not going to get Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse or Across the Spider-Verse or Gran Turismo or Uncharted, because you know what? They've made deals before all of this with various other services for that stuff. So unfortunately, that stuff is elsewhere for the time being.
Yeah.
But there was some interesting stuff like Looper. The Final Fantasy 15 movie, Kingsglaive, is in there. Elysium, Resident Evil. They have like two of the Resident Evil CG movies in there. There's Godzilla 98, but also like Godzilla 2000 and some of the, a couple other Godzilla movies that are the Japanese ones, I think. There's like Boondock Saints 2, which like I didn't know there was a 2.
Yeah.
Probably a reason.
Yeah, there is. And they've been like off and on for like a decade now. So
yeah. But yeah, there's some decent movies in there, but nothing that's like, oh, I gotta check it out. I was just like, I thought like 2 weeks ago, like, I want to see Godzilla 98, and so I was on some service I didn't have. I didn't feel like digging out my DVD for it. So I was like, well, that'll happen at some point somewhere. And finally did so. Which the player seems all right. It supports some things I guess people are into with the cinephile stuff.
Yeah.
So, but none of that really sticks out to me. So there you go. Another perk there for PS Plus people. Let's see. We got some games. They got dates this week. Salt Sea Chronicles, the newest game from Digoot Fabrique, an indie dev making games like Mutazione and Sports Friends.
Yeah.
This is their new story-driven adventure game that I think has some like choose-your-own-adventure elements to it. But yeah, you're part of Captain Maja's misfit crew who must heist their impounded ship and mount a rescue. And so you're going around these different islands of a post-flood world known as Salt Sea. And so you're running into a bunch of different communities and such and trying to figure out what's going on, what to do about getting your ship back and all this. And looks really neat. So that's out this week. So there you go. Something to keep an eye on. The other game was Worldless that was supposed to be out. When was that supposed to be out? was supposed to be out, yeah, on October 4th, earlier this week, but got delayed at the last minute to November 21st. So that's probably good for them to get out of this crunch of games coming out, kind of get to a little bit more sparse area. That is the, yeah, the game is an adventure platformer, features turn-based action combat system. Yeah, skill trees. What else is mentioned here? Yeah, exploring and uncovering the game's many secrets mirrors the game's themes of growth and understanding. Yeah, looks like one of those neat little abstract kind of games. So that one's out November 21st now on everything, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC. So that one's worth keeping an eye on. The last one here, the Gecko Gods, also got delayed to 2024, but they've added PlayStation 5 and PS4 versions to the Switch and PC releases that they had already announced. If you haven't seen this game, it is a pretty neat-looking game. If you remember Breath of the Wild, this is that, but if you're playing as a gecko.
Yep.
And not like a humanoid gecko, but a gecko.
Yeah, like a honest-to-God Geico, you can save so-and-so much on your car insurance, gecko.
Except not even that.
Nope.
Just normal gecko.
Normal-ass gecko.
So you're kind of crawling around on environments, all that kind of stuff. But you also find a means to sail a boat and do some stuff like that. I don't think you're doing any combat or anything. I think it's a lot of exploration, solving puzzles, snacking on bugs, all that kind of stuff. So that's looking pretty neat. It's out next year. So yeah, that's one to keep an eye on for next year. Seems like a Chia kind of game that came out earlier this year. So yeah, there you go. And yeah, we talked about Kate Sith, especially being concerned about this being the first time they would ever say it in a game, and where they'd be saying, you know, like we probably did with Kate Sith versus, you know, a more appropriate version like Cat She or something like that, that comes from where the that name particularly comes from. Like it's, that'd be Scottish or Irish, somewhere around there. But Square Enix just decided to say on Twitter, we saw many of you were asking, so we hope this helps. In Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, Kate Sith is pronounced Kate Sith.
Yep.
Just said, here you go. And caused nerds to argue even more than before.
Yeah.
When they argue about how it's supposed to be pronounced. You're like, well, this is what it says in the Japanese. And it's like, well, that doesn't matter in the English versions. And, you know, what about in, you know, the UK? And it's like, well, who, again, they're not doing that sort of localization. It's just regular American anime localization. So they said, it's pronounced Kate Sith here. So, all right. Continue your complaints. Whatever. There you go. That's how you pronounce it. Let's see. Yeah, for some more important news, Microsoft is reportedly going to finalize Activision's Blizzard deal on Friday, October 13th. Friday the 13th. So that's when they're going to close it.
That's I you know, I'm not a superstitious person, and I definitely find the sort of weird relationships people have with that date to be just kind of dumb, but
but there you go. I guess we'll report back next week if that happened or not. It's supposed to be closing it here by the 18th, so it's gonna be sometime in the next like 10 days. So yeah, there you go. Next up, some Nintendo news. They are going to be shutting down the Nintendo 3DS and Wii U online services in April of 2024. So they posted a big support article about this, saying, you know, what is going to go down, particularly in Let's see, the Nintendo Badge Arcade is sort of a biggish kind of app that was on there. Mm-hmm. Where you could earn badges based on a bunch of different game properties.
Yeah.
That you could use on the dashboard as icons for different,
mm-hmm.
Different, you know, apps for like the eShop or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of neat. So you just add design shit to it. I think I used the rocks from The Legend of Zelda that look like a dick.
Mm-hmm.
I just put those all over it. So there you go for that.
Mm-hmm.
But that'll be shutting down. As they say here, it'll display an error screen when launched. So you need to get on and get your badges in the badge box before then.
Oh, yeah.
Maximum of 100 categories and 1,000 badges that are in the badge box. So you need to deal with that beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause otherwise, what will be the point of a 3DS if you don't have badges? But let's see, early April 2024, they're not giving a specific date yet for when this shutdown happens. But yeah, all online communication supported apps and functionality will be shutting down. It's online play, co-op play, online co-op play, internet rankings, and other sorts of data distribution stuff that's going on with there. So let's see. They have some Q&A stuff here.
Yeah.
Yeah, players will still be able to use features and game modes that do not require an online connection after that. So there are only two apps that will still be working online, the Pokemon Bank and the Poke Transfer Transporter app. Because that's still an important part of the way that those games function and transporting those Pokemon to other platforms, other games. So that's still going to be going for the next while. And yeah, there might be some exceptions on third party games. Yeah, the question is, are you also ending online service for software from publishers other than Nintendo? They say with some exceptions, online services will end for all 3DS and Wii U software. So I don't know if there's any particular games that have like some third-party online service in them, but that might be a thing. Let's see. Will it still be possible to download update data and purchase software? That seems like that's still going to continue on. But for Street Pass and Spot Pass, Street Pass will be continuing as regularly because it uses local communication Wi-Fi for that, so that'll be fine. Spot Pass does use online communication, so that will be no longer functioning. Spot Pass is like the thing where you could Street Pass with online hotspots at, you know, retail stores like GameSpot or Best Buy or Target or whatever. But those have been down probably for several years at this point anyway. So those aren't going to be a thing anymore. But yeah, there is one group that has been talking in the wake of this, the open source project Pretendo, that has been working to preserve and replace the Nintendo Network so that people on Wii U and 3DS can potentially keep playing their games online after this shutdown happens.
Yeah.
As they've said on Twitter, we have been made aware of Nintendo's plans to shut down Nintendo Network in April. We've begun discussing our development roadmap internally to accommodate this. But yeah, for now, that service is still not currently available for public use, but they are working on that. So yeah, even though like online play is not like a strength for the 3DS or the Wii U, that is definitely going to impact a number of games. Like Splatoon will we finally be dead on the Switch or the Wii U. That has had some downtime there over the years, but still going pretty strong. Mario Kart 8, you'll finally have to upgrade to a Switch to play that online, which isn't too surprising. I think Mario Maker's online stuff went down already. But yeah, there's definitely going to be disappointing to not be able to do any online stuff because a lot of Japanese games have like extra things you could do online for that stuff. But yeah, Nintendo shutting down their fourth third and fourth online service before Nintendo or for before Microsoft and Sony shut down the PS3 or Xbox 360's online services.
Mm-hmm.
Which shows kind of the weird place Nintendo's at where they can't keep those going for very long.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go. Some bad Nintendo news. For a little bit of good news here, about 100 employees at Avalanche Software or Avalanche Studios,
mm-hmm.
Makers of Just Cause and Mad Max and some of those games, are going to be unionizing. That's about a fifth of the 500-person Swedish team. It's now bargaining with the company's management for a fair contract. They've joined Unionen, a Swedish trade union. Let's see, according to their statement, Avalanche Studios group workers have been working towards joining a union since earlier this year when members formed a local union board to bargain with the studio's management over specific benefits, but the rep didn't share specific issues. It seems like one of the requests is moving to a 4-day week is one of those that they have raised. And so, yeah, that's Sweden, it's a bit different for union stuff. You can join a trade union without a union election, which I guess means that about 70% of Sweden is part of a union.
Yep.
So that's
neat. True. Yeah, it's part of the reason why, like, the wage, because because so many of them are in organized, they essentially negotiated the wages outright. So,
yeah, so there you go. Some good news here. And then back to some bad news.
Yeah.
It seems like a number of Ubisoft's former execs that left the company in the wake of all that harassment and sexual harassment stuff a couple years ago. A bunch of them have been picked up by the police to be questioned. In their investigation by the French authorities. Let's see. Former VP Tommy Francois. Former right-hand head of creative Sergei Hescott. Who else is in here mentioned? But yeah, those two are particular bigwigs at Ubisoft. But yeah, they've been... let's see, first reported by the French newspaper Libération. As part of the detentions, the former executives will give testimony to law enforcement that could be used in an eventual criminal trial. High-profile action being taken regarding allegations that first came to light in 2020 follows a multi-year investigation involving interviews with over 50 current and former players, or former employees. So that's good. Hopefully we get some actual consequences here. Because, yeah, this all stems from accusations of from both men of sexual misconduct and contributing to a misogynistic boys club mentality at the Paris office at Ubisoft. So, yeah, there's some more here if you want to read some more details about what they did. It's all pretty gross.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, we already knew that there was a lot of awful shit going on at that company, but the fact that we now have it like written down in detail just makes the whole thing a lot worse.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you probably already got little, it's just about what you imagine it was.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll roll into what I call the layoffs dump truck. News about various layoffs happening over the past week here. First up, we've got about 50 people being laid off by Team 17, the maker of the Worms series, as well as publisher of a bunch of indie games like Blasphemous, Dredge, and others. They've eliminated about 50 positions from the company. Majority of those positions are QA. Let's see. They would deliver that news to employees during an emergency town hall meeting. So at least that's better than like a random email or something at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see. Oh, the CEO, Michael Pattinson, will also be stepping down,
mm-hmm.
Which is unusual for many of these layoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it seems like he stepped down as a result of this, so hey, good on him. I guess, I don't know if it was voluntary or not, but it seems like he probably stepped down. Mm-hmm. So, there you go. Some bad news there. Let's see. Naughty Dog has laid off about 25 QA contractors.
Mm-hmm.
That's, let's see. Seems like people are assuming this is part of some of the unfortunate news surrounding the Last of Us factions thing project they've got going on, that still has been hitting some stalls.
Yeah.
They're not going to be out anytime soon. So it seems like they had some of these contractors cancel their contract here at the end of the month of October versus whenever they were originally planning to keep them on until.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a result, no severance or benefits like that, which they're not employees, they're contractors for that reason. They don't get employee benefits for that stuff. So that's unfortunate news.
Yeah.
But let's see what's next up here. Telltale laid off an unknown amount of people.
Mm-hmm.
They did not put out any statement on any of this or any number on this. The only statement they put is, due to current market conditions, we regrettably had to let some of our Telltale team go recently. Mm-hmm. We did not take this action lightly, and our commitment to storytelling and finding new ways to do so remains the same.
Mm-hmm.
We are grateful to everyone for their dedication along this journey, and we are working to support everyone impacted. All projects currently in development are still in production, and we have no further updates at this time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's weird. Seems like they might have gotten laid off in early September and not this past week. And as well as this kind of came weeks after they acquired the UK-based studio Flavorworks, which developed the FMV game Erica.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, why did you have the money to acquire a studio but not keep these people on staff for, you know, a while longer?
Mm-hmm.
But they're not saying anything, so that's weird.
Mm.
And yeah, like they're still working on, let's see, they had a developer that worked at Telltale saying for the status of The Wolf Among Us 2, you can't say because of NDA stuff,
mm-hmm.
Which that whole thing's gotten weird. I don't know if you saw the creator of the, Fables that The Wolf Among Us is based on?
Mm-hmm.
Like, in the wake of other companies sort of fucking with him and his property, he made it all open source or public domain. He just said, fuck you, here, it's all public domain. You can't do anything with this without, you know, there being other people being able to do stuff with it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can kind of go out and look at all that now. So.
Oh, yeah.
But also, that guy's not a great person either, so
mm-hmm.
he's got some, I think he's a Republican, so take with that what you will. But there you go. That's the Telltale news. And the last one here, this happened a while ago. EA and BioWare laid off a bunch of people that were working on Dragon Age and whatnot over there, and it seems like a few of them are suing BioWare because they are not getting their full severance.
Mm-hmm.
Notice that the lawsuit was shared on Twitter yesterday by former BioWare developer John Rhenish.
Mm-hmm.
In its statement of facts, which reviewed, an attorney for the group claims that BioWare is only willing to offer laid off employees 2 weeks severance per year of service rather than the 1 month commonly awarded under recent labor cases.
Mm-hmm.
So if you weren't there for 2 years or more, you would not get a month at least. The lawsuit also claims that BioWare is unwilling to include the value of health benefits in the severance package, further shortchanging the departing developers who average 14 years of service each.
Mm.
And yeah, that's disappointing news. So yeah, just kind of adding to the chaos of those whole layoffs there. So yeah, that's your layoff dump truck. It's pretty shitty.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty shitty to be owned by a big corporation.
Because
corporations are tightening up things instead of the free-form money flow that they've been doing for the past few years. They're finally coming up to the point where that's no longer a thing that you can do unless your game is incredibly successful. But
oh yeah,
even then, that's not even a thing that's preventing them from doing it, as Epic did, despite Fortnite still doing really well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go. Another sad end of the show.
Yeah.
But yeah. We'll be back next week with a new slate of news. Hopefully some more positive stuff. Some more games coming out. What was on the list for this week? Forza Motorsports, Long Gone Days, Wildcard Football, Honkai Star Rail. That'll be cool. Check that out. Lords of the Fallen is on Friday. So there's some stuff coming out this week. So yeah. Thank you all for tuning in. Thank you to Brandon for joining this week.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news. If you enjoy the show, if you let friends and family know, they should check it out and select strangers that are also bummed out by layoff news.
Mm-hmm.
I think people should get a full severance package in all situations.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. We will be back next week with another show. Thank you all for tuning in. We'll see you all next time. Have a good one.